This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Now, Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the No Boring Zone.
Well, the Supreme Court is continuing to roll ahead, rolling back literally a century of precedent. So much for Roberts and Scalito saying that they would respect stare decisis, that they would respect the precedent, the previous decisions of the court. Anyhow, top of the morning, afternoon, or evening to you, whatever it may be, wherever you are in the world. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Friday. It's Shabbat Shalom, happy Friday, TGIF, whatever's appropriate for you. Typically, our first hour on Friday, well, it has been for going on 4 years now, every first hour on Friday, is Senator Bernie Sanders. Bernie, however, called a little earlier, or his office did, and said he's stuck on an airplane in Washington, D.C. It's one of those things where you get on the airplane and they push you out on the tarmac, and then they say, we've been holding, and so he may or may not get off the plane, and he may or may not get to a phone. And so we're going to this is the classic case of flying by the seat of your pants radio. So we will see if Bernie shows up here in the first hour. If he does, we will put him on the air frankly, anytime during the program. And also Michael Moore is going to be dropping by the Air America studios, and or at least is scheduled to. And when he does, if he has an opportunity, and he's indicated he will, but we'll see. We're subject to the vagaries of his schedule. He may be dropping by to say hi. So this is the least coordinated show that I think we've done in months. But that's fine. You know, that's radio. I want to start out, and by the way, we're going to do another presidential straw poll today. At some point, once we figured out where Bernie and Michael are at, and if they are at, then we'll get into that. So we've got a lot of stuff to do, and of course it's Anything Goes Friday. We'll be taking your calls on pretty much any topic you want to talk about throughout the day. But first, I want to start out by pointing out what I think is really one of the big stories. There's actually two. One is the presidential debates last night, and the second is one of what is really not being much paid attention to in the corporate and mainstream media, Supreme Court decision yesterday. And I think that perhaps, one of the reasons it's not so much being paid attention to is because our media, by and large, in the United States, is monopolistic. Back in the 1920s, when the game Monopoly came out, everybody understood what the word Monopoly meant. Everybody understood that monopoly is not a good thing. Everybody got it, that monopoly means that in the end, consumers get screwed, and even worse than that, that the bar gets raised so high, the bar for entry into the business work, into the business arena, into the opportunity to start a small business, the entrepreneurial bar gets raised so high that new businesses don't get started. Everybody understood this. There was an absolute consensus in the United States. In fact, the Sherman Antitrust Act, when it was proposed in 1890, on July 2nd of 1890, it passed the Senate by a 50 to 1 vote. Back at that time, there were only 52 senators, which means there must have been, 26 states. It passed by a 51-1 vote, and in the House of Representatives on June 20th, 1890, it passed unanimously. 242-0. Everybody got it. Everybody got it. Now, the Sherman Antitrust Act says, and it's very simple. The first paragraph of the act, which is the law itself, is two sentences, one paragraph. Every contract, combination in the form of trust or otherwise, or conspiracy, in restraint of trade or commerce among the several states or with foreign nations, is declared to be illegal. Every person who shall make any contract or engage in any combination or conspiracy hereby declared to be illegal shall be deemed guilty of a felony, and on conviction thereof shall be punished by fine not exceeding $10 million if a corporation, or if any other person $350,000, or by imprisonment not exceeding 3 years, or both said punishments in the discretion of the court. They go on to say, any person who shall monopolize or attempt to monopolize or combine or conspire with other persons, any other person or persons, to monopolize any part of the trade or commerce among the several states or with foreign nations thereof, shall be deemed guilty of a felony, et cetera. And then paragraph three, every contract, combination, form of trust or otherwise, or conspiracy and restraint of trade or commerce in the territory of the United States, blah, 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 blah. I mean, it's restated several times in different ways, so it's absolutely unambiguous. But this is the Sherman Antitrust Act. And Teddy Roosevelt used this rather aggressively. The first thing he broke up was called the Northern Securities Company. I mean, it was originally passed, actually the Sherman Antitrust Act was originally passed to try and stop John Rockefeller. With the Standard Oil Trust. I mean, this is what got the whole thing going. And so Teddy Roosevelt comes along and he uses the Antitrust Act. You know, he was the famous, the Trust Buster, breaking up the Northern Securities Company and a whole bunch of other companies. Even President William Howard Taft used it to split up the American Tobacco Company. The last time it was seriously enforced was Jimmy Carter breaking up AT&T. And he did not start that process, but it ended during his presidency, as I recall. It was actually... For a while, it was flipped backwards. After the Sherman Antitrust Act was passed in 1890, there was, you know, a period of time when unions really didn't have the force of law to protect them until 1935, during the Franklin Roosevelt administration with the passage of the Wagner Act. And so from 1890 until 1914, the Sherman Antitrust Act was actually used by some of the Republican administrations against unions. They said that unions were a restraint of trade. And tried to use the antitrust. I mean, the Sherman Act was used for a lot of things. It took an act of Congress in 1914 during the Progressive Era, the first Progressive Era from 1901 to 1918, called the Clayton Antitrust Act, to amend the Sherman Antitrust Act to use the word monopoly. In other words, monopolies became illegal in 1914. They clearly defined this. So it no longer, and they specifically exempted unions from it. Because it really what it was designed to do was to stop restraint of trade. It was designed to stop corporations from rising up and basically ruling the world. And now we have a couple of Supreme Court decisions, obviously the one 3 or 4 days ago that I'm very concerned about, that says that corporations can come into political campaigns and spend all the money they want. And here we have some huge trusts. But there's a larger point here, and this goes to the decision yesterday, which has gotten very, very little coverage. Odds are you did not hear about it on the news, any of the news reports. And yet I think this is one of the most important ones. This is from the New York Times today. Striking down an antitrust rule nearly a century old, the Supreme Court ruled on Thursday that it was not automatically unlawful for manufacturers and distributors to agree on minimum retail prices. Now, this goes back to a Supreme Court decision that was over a century, or nearly a century ago, in 1911, the Dr. Miles Medical Company was selling drugs, and they said to the distributors, we will only sell to you if you will agree to sell this at a particular retail price. In other words, we, the manufacturer, are going to set the minimum price. And the Supreme Court said, that's a violation of the Sherman Act. You're restraining trade. There needs to be an opportunity for competition at the retail level, just like there needs to be an opportunity for competition right throughout all the sectors. And oddly enough, and most people don't get this, but I mean, this is not rocket science. Absolutely unregulated and unrestrained. Excuse me, fighting a cold here. Unregulated and unrestrained capitalism is at its core anti-competitive. People talk about the wonders of competitive capitalism. Sorry, the goal of capitalism is monopoly. The goal of capitalism is to end up controlling the market. So if you want to have competition, which is the essence of a so-called free market, to the extent that you can have one, and is the essence of free enterprise, if you want to have competition, you have to restrain monopolies. And again, this was another 5-4 decision with Kennedy, Roberts, Alito, Scalia, and Thomas saying, we're going to strike this thing down, this 1911 Supreme Court decision. And Stephen Breyer in his dissent, he's got a great book out, by the way, which is one of my BuzzFlash books of the month. I recommend it. He said, the only safe predictions to make about today's decision is that it was likely to raise the price of goods at retail, and it will create considerable legal turbulence as lower courts seek to develop workable principles. It's the striking this thing. Now, people are out there yelling and screaming, for example, about, you know, there's not enough liberal talk radio on the air, and all of the, these are symptoms of the problem. The problem is monopoly. Not just in the retail sector, but also in the media sector, also in the manufacturing sector. I mean, right across the board, it's monopoly. That's the problem right now. The crisis of capitalism, the crisis of American democracy is monopoly. And yesterday, frankly, during the Democratic debates, I was wishing this had been brought up. Somebody got close to it. Dennis Kucinich, 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
Planet actually is a living thing. You know, this whole meme of Gaia, the Earth as a living organism, we really need to bring that back. By the way, Air Americans, head over to the airamerica.com/Tom Hartman page and join the Tom Hartman blog and start blogging. David, again today, we're going to give away another copy of my new book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. It's just out in paperback. And by the way, the book that we wrote online on this show, I don't think this has ever been done before. Somebody writes a book online where we actually, you know, I would do a rant for an hour and take, you know, and occasionally we would take some of these techniques and take callers and try them out on them on the air and demonstrate how to do effective political communication. The tools and techniques of persuasion used from psychology to advertising to politics and how they can be applied to politics. So the title of the book is Cracking the Code, and it has now gone on sale, pre-order. They won't be shipping for a little while, but it's gone on sale over at Amazon. So there's a link up at the top of TomHartman.com to that. So anyhow, we will be giving away a copy of Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class, to David's favorite blog post today, David Poole, our producer. And you can check out that and check out the book. Just a quick overview of some of the news of the day, then we'll pop into your phone calls here. Nancy Pelosi and Al Gore signed the Live Earth Pledge. Speaking of a living thing, the bumper music here. This is something created by Al Gore. It calls on governments to cut global warming pollution by 90% in developed countries and more than half worldwide by 2050. And on July 7th, Live Earth concerts all around the world. People are going to be asked to sign the pledge. A good thing. This year is on track to be the second warmest since records began in the 1890s. This is from Reuters. And floods in Pakistan or a heat wave in Greece may herald worse disruptions in store from global warming. We'll see what this means for the hurricane season here in the United States. John McKay, the U.S. attorney who was, you know, one of the fired attorneys, has apologized publicly for saying it was a good thing when Gonzalez was confirmed. He says he told his friends, I said, you're going to like this guy. He's humble, he's honest, he's hardworking, and he's smart. And now he's proved me wrong. And Colin Powell yesterday, talking with Larry King, says that the torture memo, again, he's talking about how Dick Cheney, the president of the United States, Dick Cheney, acting president of the United States, Dick Cheney, got this memo passed, this torture memo, and kept it out of the Secretary of State's sight for 2 years, that he learned about this thing when he read about it in the newspaper. I mean, this is pretty amazing. It's just, it's astounding. So that, the Supreme Court, a lot going on. A lot going on. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. If you'd like to drop into our live chat room, go to TomHartman.com, click live chat, or you can go to AirAmerica.com, and on the Tom Hartman page, you click my name, and it'll take you to the Tom Hartman page where our blog is located, and there's also a direct link from there into our chat room as well. Mark in Colorado Springs, Colorado, listening on KKZN. Hey, Mark, what's up?
It's Clark.
Oh, I'm sorry, Clark. Hey, Clark.
Let me give a shout out to Mark, who I know is listening in. The reason I called is I wanted to comment that I think the stock market is the biggest scam ever foisted on humanity, maybe after religion. It's gaining.
Okay. How so?
I think you probably know more about the history of corporations than I do, but it originally started out, it was only supposed to be an emergency thing for a crisis situation where the government and industry would get together to take care of something like a flood or, you know, maybe in times of war or something. And then after the
crisis respectfully, Clark, you're operating under a misapprehension. The first corporate form, in modern corporate form, was the British East India Company. It was incorporated in 1600, in December of 1600, by Queen Elizabeth I. And the reason that she did this was because this was after the successful worldwide exploration. You know, there was a whole series of them, and the Dutch trading companies were doing well, and you know, Columbus had come here, and all this kind of stuff. And they were looking for a way to organize capital that would have reduced risk for the people putting the capital in, because it was basically the Queen and a bunch of members of the House of Lords. And so they created the British East India Company, and that was the beginning of the first. It wasn't a publicly traded entity at that time. It wasn't a stock exchange, but that was the beginning of the modern corporation. And you know, it's just headed forward since then. But we had corporations when this country started. It's just that they had to be incorporated in the states. The founders were very, very clear that they were not going to put the word corporation into the Constitution because they wanted them to be under the control of the states, so that local eyes would be on them, so that they could, their, you know, if they got into bad behavior, it could be restrained.
So where did they go wrong?
Well, I wrote an entire book about this called Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights, and it charts the history of the rise of corporate power in the United States. And the big change was in 1886 with the Supreme Court decision, Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad. And it wasn't even a decision, actually. It was a lie about a decision, but that was the turning point, was the 1880s in the United States. And the stock market is just a place where you can buy and sell pieces of a company. That's, it's lottery, but it's not a scam. 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
No, we're not gonna stop speaking out until we're absolute toast. You know, you just keep out there, you keep plugging, you keep fighting, and you may not see the results even in your own lifetime, but we have to do this work. We have to wake up America. We have to work to bring back democracy. People say, you know, why do you work so hard at all this? I agree with George Bernard Shaw. When I die, I want to be all used up. By the way, welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on listener-supported radio, supported by you, our listeners, supporting our sponsors. Those sponsors, you hear a sponsor on your local station, and particularly the sponsors on your local stations, so you think, yeah, you know, I like that ad or I like that company. If I'm not going to buy a new car this year, I may have a friend who will. Give them a call and let them know that you're listening. And pass the word along about them. And, of course, thanks for supporting our national sponsors like SacredGroundsCoffee.com, SmallDog.com, Small Dog Electronics, the Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE, ECOWINE, and Purina One Natural Blends at 1-866-380-MEOW. It helps keep us going. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Lee in Duval, Washington. Hey, Lee, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. I'm fighting pneumonia here, I think.
I shouldn't ask that. I knew what was coming. Hey, Bernie's not there, and would you please do me a favor and pass this question on to him? And it's going to be the second time I've asked him this question on your show, and I was somewhat a little bit dissatisfied with his first answer. And what I'd like to see Bernie do, the last time I phrased this, I said, why doesn't somebody introduce a bill to Congress? I'm going to refocus that and say, why doesn't Bernie but I guess it really doesn't matter, introduce a bill to Congress that makes it prohibits the anything but government ownership of voting machines or any voting systems. The reason he was a little bit dissatisfied because he went on to think, well, we need paper ballots. But regardless of what we get, we need to act. And here's why I want to do this, and here's the strategy on this. It comes with a strategy. I've got the bill process right before me, and under the third step, that goes to a subcommittee review. Hearings provide the opportunity to put on the record the views of the executive branch, experts, other public officials, supporters, and opponents of the legislation. This will give us a written record of everybody who opposes democracy and who favors corporate ownership of our democracy. And that is, and I think one of the problems we've had so far is that we keep focusing on the evils of Bush, and Bernie says over and over again how that is the worst administration ever. I agree with him. That's not the issue. I think we all know that by now. What we need to do is expose the people behind them, bring them out in the open, because they're hiding back there, and they put these front men up there to do all their evil doings and all their.
No, I got it, Lee, and your point is well made and well taken, and I agree with it. And Bernie has on this program on a number of occasions said, let's just go to paper as long as there's any doubt. And I'm not going to speak for him. I'll let him speak for himself. But my position on this, and I think everybody who listens to the program regularly, and you, Lee, as well, know my position on this is that the last thing among the commons that we should ever privatize is our vote. And that, in my opinion, needs to be the frame, that these guys have privatized our vote. They should not have privatized our vote, these guys being, you know, whatever. I mean, frankly, whenever the electronic voting machines were first introduced with private corporations involved with them, and I think it goes back to either the end of the Reagan administration or the beginning of the first Bush administration. But the idea that we could have privatized our vote, or that, for example, we could have privatized, I think this is the point you're speaking to, Lee, that we could have privatized the voting, you know, maintaining our voting lists, you know, that Florida hired Choice Point. This is a private corporation. We should not privatize any aspect of the vote, period. It should all be handled in an absolutely transparent and subpoenaable fashion by government employees who are answerable to we the people. I mean, it's just that simple. And that ultimately has to be the meme, in my opinion. And is whatever position individual senators or members of the House of Representatives have, that, I think, it needs to be the one that we need to be pushing. Even Dennis Kucinich in his bill that's calling for paper ballots doesn't specifically address the issue of the privatization of the vote. And that has to be, you know, it's like death tax. It's like, you know, right to life or right to choose. I mean, these phrases are very, very powerful. And privatization of the vote is the meme. I'm telling you, this is the meme that we have to use in order to get back a voting system that has any integrity at all, is that privatization of the vote is a sin. And let's stop the privatization of our vote. Let's take our vote back from the corporations. It's, you know, just very, very straightforward. Diane in Linwood, Washington. Hey, Diane.
Hi, Tom. You're talking about corporate greed and criminal behavior. I wanted to make a comment to you about your little blurb on the radio yesterday that you were running on Robitussin.
Yeah, well, back to the matter. Go ahead.
Robitussin refers to A.H. Robbins Company. And yeah. I don't know if you remember, but back in the late 60s, early 70s, they brought to market the Dalcon Shield, which sterilized 300,000 women in the United States and led to a class action lawsuit. And the judge handing down the decision lit into the corporate officers, because it was so clear from the written records kept by the company that they intentionally left a product on the market that they knew was damaging to women. They went against the recommendations of their own doctors.
Yeah.
And A.H. Robbins went bankrupt to avoid paying out a lot of money on the class action settlement. They reinvented themselves as American Home Products, which is the Watkins people. And in the last 10 years, they have reemerged. They are back in business, taking people's money when they stole my right to have a family.
Yeah.
So
I'm
pleading with people not to buy any A.H. Robbins products, because they're criminals.
Diane, your point is well taken, and in fact, a very, very close friend of ours, was among those people who tried to sue, and she was rendered sterile by the Dalkon Shield. Just to, for the record, yesterday I had, the last couple of days I've been slowly coming down with something. I think I picked it up on one of my last trips in my lungs. And I was a little goofy during parts of the show yesterday. It was because I drank two of these little bottles of Robitussin throughout the course of the morning and stopped from coughing on the air. Today, you'll be happy to know that this morning Louise made our home remedy. We've used this since for 30 years, more than 30 years. And you take you take the juice of a lemon. And you take an equivalent amount of honey and you stir them together, and then you take an entire bulb of garlic and run it through a garlic press, one clove at a time, and stir it all together. And she rinsed out the Robitussin bottle this morning, poured it down the drain, rinsed it out, and filled it with this lemon honey garlic mixture, which is what I am chowing down today. And so today I'm running, and everybody in the building is like avoiding me, and the people on the morning show here were making jokes about how bad it smells in here, but that's, and frankly, I can feel it in my lungs. I mean, it just goes right. The garlic just goes right to your lungs, and I feel so much better. I don't know how it sounds on your end, but that's my solution. So, Diane, thanks for the call and thanks for your point. It was well made, and now you've got a home remedy that I have found to be the most effective, more effective actually than even a lot of antibiotics over the years. Although, you know, there's times for that as well. Luke in Des Moines, Iowa, or Illinois, rather. Luke, you want to disagree with me about something here?
Oh, not necessarily disagree. Hey, Tom, quick question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Can you please explain the concept of a monopoly? When you say monopoly, name me a company today that's a monopoly.
Well, sure. Actually, it's not so much an individual company as it is what happens when the bar to entry into the marketplace is raised to the point where it's just not possible to get in.
That set the bar.
Back in the 60s and 70s, if you were to walk into any shopping mall, any strip mall,
today,
in the what is this, Interrogation 101, Luke?
Today, please. Not 1960. This is 2007. Today, please.
I would submit to you, Luke, that probably every one of the companies in the Fortune 500 are in one form or another monopoly.
So Walmart's a monopoly. How so?
The point that I was making before is that back in the 1960s, you could walk into any shopping center in the United States and see mostly family-owned businesses, mostly locally owned businesses. When the bar to entry to the marketplace is raised beyond the point where people can participate in it, and it's only giant corporations, you've got a dozen companies that control more than 90% of everything that people read and hear and watch on TV, hear on the radio, and read in newspapers and magazines. You've got six companies that control over 90% of our oil industry. You've got about 15 companies that control the vast majority of our retail sector in the United States. That, in my opinion, is a monopoly. And I would submit to you that the vast majority of the corporations in America that are at the very top, the Fortune 500 companies, are operating as monopolies. They're operating in ways that prevent entrepreneurship. They're wiping out small local businesses and restraining trade as a consequence of it. And I think it's wrong, and I think that we should be enforcing the Sherman Act. And when Jimmy Carter busted up AT&T, it actually increased shareholder value. People who owned stock in AT&T and ended up with stock in the Baby Bells and in Lucian Technologies actually saw an increase in their shareholder value. And Lucian Technologies got much more aggressive and much more confident at developing innovative things as a private, separate company than it had as Bell Labs. So it's just very, very straightforward. 45 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270, our phone number, TomHartmann.com or AirAmerica.com for our blog.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartmann Program, fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio.
In fact, let me take this a step beyond just, you know, monopoly. Well, actually, to monopoly. Back in the 19th century in the United States, in the 1700s and the 1800s, in every state in the Union, it was illegal for a corporation to own stock in another corporation. And a corporation could only be incorporated for a single purpose. And perhaps this is where our original caller in the first hour here, who said, you know, corporations were set up originally to deal with emergencies. The Erie Canal Corporation is a good example. Actually, a lot of the early corporations in America were set up to do public works and things like that. But I think that we really ought to think about that. If a corporation is a person, should they be allowed to own other persons? So I thought slavery was outlawed in the United States. I say that facetiously, but if we were to say, okay, corporations can't own stock in other corporations, and they can only do one thing, that would probably go a long way toward, and it did, in fact, for almost 200 years in the United States, or 150 years in the United States, go a long way toward preventing corporate abuse, or the abuse of the enormous accumulation of wealth and power in the corporate form. Because the fact of the matter is that corporations also used to be limited in their lifespan to the productive lifespan of a human. In every state in the Union, corporations could not exist for more than either 20, 30, or 40 years, depending on the state. The theory, and at the end of that time, you had to dissolve the corporation, have the essentially the same thing as probate, you know, on any profits and things, and then they could reincorporate, start over again. Now, you could do this in a practical sense without the appearance of the business ending or stopping conducting business. It's just that they didn't want the corporate form to be something that could be used to, on an unlimited basis, accumulate wealth. Because the concern was that if that happened, that what would happen is you'd have dynasties emerge that would be based on the corporate form rather than on inherited wealth. Because we had this inheritance tax to prevent it based on inherited wealth. And that's exactly what's going on right now. And again, another thing to break up. Strange things in the news. Our crazy alert for the day. Dunkin' McDonald's. Somebody you probably never heard of. Pardon me. A dog. Dog who registered to vote. Yeah, Jane Bella in Seattle says, oops. She was protesting what she perceived to be a voting system where it was too easy to register to vote, so she registered her dog. And sure enough, that is vote fraud, and she got busted. She pled guilty to the misdemeanor in a plea bargain rather than the felony. So it's 10 hours community service, $250 fine, but, you know, do not do this. And here are five reasons to impeach Bush. Number five. The joint impeachment proceedings would still allow corporate media time to cover Paris Hilton. Number four, correct the Clinton impeachment, raise the bar back to blowing the Constitution. Number three, impeaching Bush would merely be consistent with his National Guard service, not completing his term. Number two, give Bush a head start on his presidential library. And number one, finally, an effective way to truly eliminate WMD. Indeed. Lee in Milwaukee. Hey, Lee, what's up?
Hi. I think it's just time, Tom, that the Democrats start using the proper frame for these issues they're dealing with right now. One is that every time there's any reference to the Bush administration's failure to abide by the subpoenas, that should be cover-up, should be used every time.
And yeah, the second, absolutely.
And the second issue is, if you remember during the Alito confirmation, the Republicans made such a big deal out of up or down vote, like a bunch of
yep.
robots. Well,
yep.
they're using the same tactics right now, the Republicans are, blocking the Democrats' legislation. So why don't we hear up or down vote? I haven't
exactly. And in fact, on our I also do a local show here on AM 620 KPOJ in Portland before this program, and we had on Leslie Frain, the executive director of SEIU Local 503, here in the state of Oregon. SEIU's, you know, the Service Employees International Union.
Uh-huh.
And I said, you know, the religious right had this Justice Sunday thing about the, you know, the confirmations of Alito and Scalia, because they were concerned that there wouldn't be 60 votes to cut off debate, so that there could be the 51-vote majority vote that would put them, you know, that would install either or both of them. And, you know, they had this TV thing, and it got all kinds of coverage, and they had a big... And you guys have the infrastructure for this. Why didn't the AFL-CIO and SEIU get together and do an up or down vote, call for an up or down vote, you know, do a labor equivalent of Justice Sunday? And, of course, she's with a statewide one, and so she couldn't speak for the national. But I absolutely agree with you that we need to change the memes, and the Democrats need to start getting aggressive. And the use of the word cover-up is an important one, and the up or down vote meme needs to come back. solid. Well said. Thank you very much. Todd in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Todd, what's up?
Yeah, I hate to go kind of off of subject from the last caller, but I was calling in response to the person who wanted you to name a couple of monopolies from current day. And
yeah.
I know that you're from the same area I am, and here in Portland, if I want cable because satellite is, you know, unreliable or because of trees blocking the view, I have to have Comcast. I know in some areas it's people have to
Yeah,
have
if I want electricity, I have to have PGE. I have
exactly.
no choice.
Phone service, Quest, you know, all these
yeah.
things. And it seems
yeah.
like monopolies have just become more localized, almost to the point of cooperating with each other. You know, I've got the Northwest. Why don't you take the Southwest? Why don't you take the Midwest?
Right. And this is why this Supreme Court decision yesterday is so troubling, saying, well, we're not going to enforce that part of the Sherman Act, even though the Supreme Court ruled in 1911 that that's the way it is. It's just not a good thing. Todd, thanks very much. Larry from Portland to Portland. Larry in Portland. We just have a few seconds before we have to wrap up this hour. Larry,
okay.
Quickly.
Urging yourself and people to get a hold of the July this year, 2007 issue of the Hightower Lowdown, consistent again with privatization, corporatization. $100 billion worth of highways, bridges, airports, other public properties could be transferred into corporate hands in just the next 2 years.
Yeah, and the corporations are out there lobbying like crazy. They are investing millions, tens of millions of dollars in politicians.
They're quoting a representative from Goldman Sachs who's saying that he's trying to help spur the market. Top officials are visiting more than 35 states lobbying to get their mitts on our public assets.
Yeah, absolutely, and they want it. And to speak about a monopoly, I mean, once they own your road. Once they're on your road, what are you going to do? I mean, get a giant pogo stick? Learn how to become a helicopter pilot? I mean, you know, once they've got your road, they've really got you. 57 minutes past the hour. We're going to do a presidential straw poll in the next hour, and Michael Moore might be dropping by. Stick around.
The Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. On Air America Radio. To the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on Anything Goes Friday. I wanted to talk very briefly about the debate last night, the Democratic presidential debate. First of all, I was concerned that I was unable to find it on any TV channel. The thing was being moderated by Tavis Smiley, who's on PBS, but our local PBS affiliate, Oregon Public Broadcasting, apparently chose not to run the thing. We had to watch it on the internet, on the PBS website. So Louise and I sat in bed with a laptop and watched the debate. But it's like, you know, shouldn't this thing be on TV someplace? Even C-SPAN. I mean, it just, you know, it wasn't there. There were a couple of points that I thought were you know, really important and really, you know, worth highlighting. And one of them was a question that astoundingly was completely missed by every single person on the panel. Every single person. And here's the question. This notice, this is the questioner is comparing black high school graduates with white high school dropouts.
According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, in 2006, the unemployment rate of black high school graduates, was 33% higher than an unemployment rate for white high school dropouts.
Now you get that? 33% higher unemployment rate among black high school graduates than white high school dropouts.
To what do you attribute this inequity, which keeps many black families locked in the grip of poverty?
This is the question, and Joe Biden was the first to answer it, and then everybody else did. And I kept waiting for somebody to realize that the obvious answer is racism. I mean, it's really simple. The obvious answer is racism. When you've got 33% higher unemployment rate among black high school graduates than among white high school dropouts, there can be no other answer than racism. which is why the Supreme Court decision of earlier in the week that rolled back a good chunk of Brown versus Board of Education as if there's no more racism in the United States was so absurd. In fact, it was so obscene. But somehow, I think every single one of the presidential candidates thought that this guy said black graduates compared to white graduates, because they all answered by saying, well, we need to give better education to blacks. I mean, that was the under theme, the undertone of the message. Here's as it continues.
You know, Dwayne, one of the things that we all talk about is this achievement gap.
So this is Joe Biden. He wasn't asking it about an achievement gap. He was saying, you know, black graduates versus white dropouts.
We should remind everybody that the day before a black child, a minority child, steps into a classroom, half the achievement gap already exists. That is, they already start behind.
So in other words, see, Joe Biden, I'm sure without realizing it, is implying that a black high school graduate is not as well educated or as smart as a white high school dropout. And that's what every single one of the Democratic candidates said. They all said variations on our education system is all screwed up.
So the moment they walk into that school, they are already behind.
Now, this is true. This is true by and large, but it's true also of poor whites. It's true basically of just failing school systems.
And that gap widens. And it widens because we do not start school earlier. We do not give single mothers in disadvantaged homes the opportunities that they need in order to know what to do to prepare their children. A mother who talks to her child on a regular basis from infancy to being a toddler, that child, when it's 2 years old, will have a vocabulary 300 words more than the child not talked to.
See, but again, what does this have to do with black high school graduates versus white high school dropouts? Black high school graduates having a 33% higher dropout rate. I was very disappointed. I thought this was an opportunity for, and I kept waiting, for somebody to have actually listened to the question, and apparently nobody did. That was kind of the low point for me, frankly, of the Democratic debate last night. I thought it was an opportunity missed, an extraordinary opportunity missed. One of the high points was the question about what are you going to do about job outsourcing? And everybody, except Dennis Kucinich, took a pass on it. I mean, all of the, you know, they basically said, oh, we need to have trade agreements that have protections for labor and protections for the environment and all that, which is a way of saying the transnational corporations should continue to rule the world, to paraphrase the title of David Corton's book, When Corporations Rule the World. And in fact, Dennis Kucinich was the only one who said, no, we need to take on the conventional wisdom. We need to take on the corporatocracy.
A lot of Americans are concerned with outsourcing of U.S. jobs. Most corporations, I think it's fair to say, don't share that concern. In fact, they argue that we're living in a global economy and Americans have to compete in that environment. Which side are you on? And if you agree that outsourcing is a problem, what's your solution?
I've stood behind plant gates that were locked, where grass is growing in the parking lots, where they used to make steel, they used to make bicycles, washing machines, and now there's grass growing in the parking lots. I know what the solution is, and you do too, and I want to challenge my fellow candidates. One of my first acts in office will be to cancel NAFTA and the WTO and go back to trade conditioned on workers' rights, human rights, and environmental quality principles. That's what we must do. A Democratic administration started NAFTA. A Democratic administration will end it.
Now, even Dennis Kucinich was giving lip service to trade based on environmental principles. I'm sorry, we should have trade based on what's best for us. And Mexico should have trade based on what's best for them. And China should have trade based on on what's best for them. Every nation should have a trade policy, a domestic and international trade policy that is based on the concept of what's best for our country. What are the products that we absolutely must make here at home because we may need them at some point? We cannot make, and, you know, assuming that you need a military, and that's an assumption that I actually operate under, we cannot make a missile. We can't make a fighter jet right now without parts from China. And yet China has, you know, one of the Chinese generals threatened to nuke U.S. cities if we take China on over Taiwan. What's wrong with this picture? I mean, just from a strategic and security point of view, I mean, there's the irony of the fact that the Border Patrol guys, and again, you know, I don't think that we need a fence and et cetera, but it's just the irony That the border can, our border patrol guys down in the south, the southern border are wearing uniforms that are made in Mexico. Because we don't make clothes in the United States anymore. We don't have the ability to turn domestic industry into military industry in time of crisis because the industry has all been moved offshore. I mean, so number one, we should be looking at saying there are strategic things that need to be done. And number two, we should be saying, and there are things that we simply want to make in the United States because we want to continue making things in the United States. There are industries that we want to keep in this country. And the way you do that, obviously, is with tariffs, and everybody, and apparently, including even Dennis Kucinich, is afraid to use the word, although I can't speak specifically to or for that, but because nobody used that word. It's like that word is a dirty phrase or something. So only Biden and Edwards, by the way, said that investment income should be taxed. This is another question. What are you going to do about the income gap? And Mike Gravel just went out into outer space on this thing. He said we need to do away with the income tax and put into place a national sales tax. And he didn't even get applauded. I mean, people in the audience are like, what? Say what? And do away with the income tax and replace it with the sales tax so you know, people who spend 100% of their income are being taxed on 100% of their income, and you know, average working people, whereas people who save 90% of their income and only spend 10% of their income or only be taxed on the 10% of their income that they spend? This makes no sense. This is Mike Gravel's solution. But Biden, which surprised me because, you know, he's voted for the credit card thing. He's from a state where all the credit card companies are, you know, Delaware and the banks are based. And John Edwards both pointed out that we have a tax code now that pays where people pay 15% income tax maximum if they earn their income from sitting on their butt around the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive or the capital gains check, but they pay a maximum 35% tax rate if they actually work. We're going to clear all our phone lines, and we're going to do our presidential straw poll right after this break. So I'm just going to answer the phone, put you on the air, and just tell us who you would vote for, Democrat or Republican for that matter, who you would vote for if the election was held today among the field. And by the way, it looks like Al Gore is leading in New Hampshire, so we'll even include him in this list. You know, who would you vote for if the election was held today? Lauren's going to clear our lines right now, and I'm just going to be, over the next segment, we're going to do our presidential straw poll for the day. So you'll just hear it ring until I put you on the air, 16 minutes past the hour.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
It's our Anything Goes Friday, and we'll be getting back to that, to your calls on any topic. But right now we're going to do our presidential straw poll. We did this last week. Interesting results. We're going to do it again. I'm just going to put you on the air. You'll hear the phone ring and ring and ring until I actually, when you hear that click, you are on the air. When it stops ringing, I'm going to put you on the air, and you'll have 10 seconds at the most. Just tell us the city that you're calling from and who you would vote for if the election were held, the primary election were held today. So, number one, 707 error code, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, this is Jake from Arcata. Dennis Kucinich gets my vote.
Okay, Dennis Kucinich. Next, 303.
Dennis Kucinich, because he's not saying what he thinks people want to hear. He's saying what he believes.
Okay, next one, 804 error code.
Dennis Kucinich, because he's...
Hello?
Hello?
Sorry, you got to be listening to the phone here. You're up next.
Who, me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, who would you vote for?
Dennis Kucinich.
Okay. Boy, we quite an accumulation. Okay, who would you vote for today?
Dennis Kucinich, universal health care with no strings.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I'm going to ask one other question. Are you voting because somebody called and asked you to vote? 217, you're on the air.
I would like to vote for Barack Obama, my favorite son from Illinois. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Area 716, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. My vote is for President Mike Gravel.
Okay, great. Mike Gravel, 503, you're on the air.
I'm from Portland, Oregon. I'd vote for Al Gore. He's the only one that can save the world, and I would hope Kucinich is VP.
Okay, and you're on the air.
Okay, I'm calling from Seattle, and I would vote for John Edwards because of his wanting to build the labor unions and his wanting to eliminate poverty.
Great, thank you. You're on the air in Grand Rapids, 616.
Yeah, it's Rick. I would vote for Al Gore if he decides to run. If not, it would be John Edwards.
Okay, thank you, Rick. 585, you're on the air. Hello? Okay, 413, you're on the air.
I would like to vote for Barack Obama. I'm calling from Greenfield, Mass. We need damage control from all the third world countries we've pissed off.
Great. Okay, 208, you're on the air.
I would vote for Gore and Barack. Give us 16 years to reform the government.
Okay, great. So area code 626, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm from Pasadena, California, and I would vote for Obama.
Great. Thank you very much. Area code 631, yeah. You're on the air.
Yeah, John Edwards, he's the least politically vulnerable in a general election, and my second choice in an instant runoff would be Senator Obama. I think if he can overcome the audacity of bigotry and prejudice in America.
Got it. Thank you very much. You're on the air.
Gore, Bloomberg, independent ticket.
Okay. Oh, that's an interesting one. 612, you're on the air.
John Edwards.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Air code 972, you're on the air.
Yeah, Dennis Kucinich.
Dennis Kucinich. Okay. Area code 602, you're on the air.
Yeah, John Edwards, and I was disappointed about the tariff. No mention of the tariff.
Yeah, you're right. I agree. Area code 608, you're on the air.
Blue Mountains, Wisconsin, Al Gore, too many reasons to mention. Thanks.
Okay, great. Thank you. You're on the air.
Am I on the air?
You are.
Joe Biden, I agree with 95% of what he says, and when you stand him up to anybody else, he'd be the most electable by far.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. He is very articulate. 503, you're on the air.
Hey, Portland. Kucinich, yep. Or Frank Zappa, but neither one of them will win.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much. 248, you're and Frank Zappa's passed on. 248, you're on the air.
Obama to heal the national racial divide and to heal the international black eye we have.
Great. 425, you're on the air.
Hi, from Seattle, and I would vote for Al Gore first and then Barack Obama second.
Great, thank you. And you would vote for?
This is Kim, San Francisco, John Edwards, or Gore.
Great, thank you very much. And you would vote for?
Edwards.
Edwards, and you're calling from?
San Diego, California, area code 619.
Great, there you go. Thank you very much. And you would call for, and you would vote for?
Yes, I'd vote for Al Gore, Gore-Obama ticket in a second. I think they would win by a landslide, if not John Edwards.
Great. Thanks. And you're calling from San Francisco, right?
Absolutely.
Or the area. Okay. Area code 785. You're on the air.
Oh, Gore, Obama, 08.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Area code 253. You're on the air.
Kucinich first, Gore second.
Okay, thank you. 623, you'd vote for?
623, I'd vote for Gore, Kucinich, Edwards, instant runoff style. Instant
okay,
runoff
thank you.
Voting,
yeah. Yeah, we really need to. We're going to try an instant runoff on one of these times here. So we just weren't quite ready for it today. 480, you're on the air.
Yes, I'll vote for Chris Dobbs because of habeas corpus.
Okay, great. You are on the air. Who would you vote for?
Dennis Kucinich.
Okay, thank you. 901, who would you vote for?
Fred Thompson, not.
Fred Thompson, not. Okay, that's a negative vote. Who would you vote for?
Al Gore, if he doesn't run, John Edwards.
Thank you very much. And who would you vote for?
Salinas, California, and I vote for Dennis Kucinich, health care and fair trade.
Okay, thank you. 912, who would you vote for?
My dream is the Edwards-Obama ticket.
Okay, great. And 313, who would you vote for?
I say Kucinich, but I can't believe no one said Hillary.
Okay, yeah, I can't either. 858, who would you vote for?
I would vote for Al Gore if he runs, but if he doesn't, I would vote for John Edwards because I think both of them can win.
Okay, great. 201, who would you vote for?
Al Gore, then Edwards.
Great, thank you very much. 479, who would you vote for?
Who? Edwards and Gore.
Thank you very much. 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
You follow your feelings. You follow your dreams. You follow the leader into the tree. sitting there waiting. Neither one of us knows. You gotta keep one eye open.
Thirty-four minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, our presidential straw poll winner today was Al Gore. And apparently he's leading in New Hampshire right now as well, according to a report from the New Hampshire Union Leader. You can find it's a story. I found it over at commondreams.org. But here's how it came down, and we didn't take second and third candidates. I think next week we're going to try doing this. Mike Toth sent me a grid for doing this spreadsheet, and thank you, Michael, for doing this as a instant runoff ballot, and I think it's a great idea. We'll try that the next time we do this. But David was not making note of second and third choices, so these are all just first choices. Al Gore got 13 votes. So he won our straw poll today. Dennis Kucinich got 9 votes, and John Edwards got 8 votes. So they came in second and third, and very close second and third. They were within one vote of each other again last week as well. Barack Obama got 4 votes. Chris Dodd got 1, and Joe Biden got 1. Richardson, 0, and Hillary Clinton, 0. So and Mike Gravel got 1 vote. And, of course, there was the 1 negative vote for Fred Thompson. So that's what it is. By the way, if you want to continue the discussion, you can drop into our live chat room at TomHartman.com or go over to AirAmerica.com/TomHartman page, or just go to AirAmerica.com and click on the Tom Hartman Show, and it'll take you to our page. And you can blog there. And, in fact, David will be picking his favorite blog message for the day today, whatever appeals to him, and we'll be sending that person a free copy of my new book, Screw the Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. And or you can, weigh in our chat room, which I've got to get back into. My computer crashed here, and my apologies to the folks in the chat room. I'll get it back in during the next break. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And we'll go back to pretty much any topic you want. And Bonnie in Burgettstown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Bonnie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Earlier in the show, you were talking about monopolies, and there was a caller who asked, what is a monopoly? But I remember back in my Econ 101 class, there were the 4 models of industry: competitive, monopolistic, competitive, oligopolistic, and monopolistic. And both the oligopolies and the monopolies, they control who enters the market, like you were talking about. And an example would be like Verizon. It's suing Vonage for piggybacking on their lines, which were built by the taxpayers. And I can't get interstate landline service other than Verizon. So that would be an example of a monopoly. And but most industries, I think, that control our lives are oligopolistic, like big energy and big agriculture. They control supply. They collude. They're price givers. An example would be like big agribusiness. They're saying, we can't find workers to pick our plants, so we're letting the produce rot. Well, they can pay somebody more, but they're controlling the supply.
Yeah.
And, we want to know what's in our food, but they won't tell us, and they have laws that will prevent us from knowing that. I asked somebody at Trader Joe's yesterday who sends their bagels, and they wouldn't tell me.
Well, they probably didn't know.
No, they know. They're not allowed to tell.
Oh, that's interesting.
Bonnie.
Go ahead.
Oh, because they were having trouble with quality, so they're not accepting the shipments, and I haven't been able to pick up bagels. But I think, where does it come from? And they're not allowed to tell me.
Yeah. Well, and the access to the market is just a really critical one. And Bonnie, you identified it really well. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Cliff in Orange County, California. Hey, Cliff.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say about the Democratic Congress, why I'm so disappointed is they've been wrong on the issues. They've been wrong on immigration. They've been wrong on the war. They could have ended the war simply by filibustering the funding. They've been wrong on.
They didn't even have to filibuster it. They just didn't have to vote for it. But
yeah,
You know, their argument is that the Democrats thought that this would be blamed on the Republicans, and it wasn't. And it's the battered wife syndrome. I'm telling you, the Democrats are behaving like they are the bullies have won, and they're terrified. And it's time for them to stand up, and it's time for them to start taking serious positions if they want to be taken seriously in 2008. You're spot on, Cliff. I mean, it really is time for them to start speaking out, and speaking out loudly and talking back the way that Elizabeth Edwards did to that crazy lady. I think John Edwards was correct when he identified these people as crazies the other day on Chris Matthews' show. It is time to start talking back. Mina in St. Paul, Nebraska. Hey, Mina.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you, I'm supporting John Edwards because he was the first one to come out and say, I made a mistake in giving Bush the authority to go to war. I also heard...
That took a lot of political courage, by the way,
yes,
because that totally defied conventional wisdom.
And he's also said that he wanted to fight in 2004, and John Kerry didn't. And you can see that they're fighting now. I was so proud of Elizabeth. I just couldn't tell you. I stood up and cheered when she lit into old Coulter.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Thank you very much, Mina. I spot on. Kendra in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Kendra.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Thanks for listening on KKZN.
I'm fairly upset with the political system in general. It seems to me we've been so worried about what's going on overseas and with Iraq and Afghanistan that we've really forgotten the people at home and left them high and dry. And that's how we ended up with the Katrina situation.
In part, I would say that we ended up with the Katrina situation because the Bush administration was pursuing their ideology of let private corporations and private nonprofits deal with it, rather than that the role of government is to help us all out when we are in trouble. And that's why the first response of FEMA was to put Pat Robertson's Operation Blessing up on their homepage, on their webpage, so that you could contribute money to Pat Robertson. That was the Bush administration response to Katrina. It was a disaster. So you think Barack Obama is the guy who solved those problems?
Well, I think Barack Obama has a good point in that sometimes you have to stay out of the business and the policies of other countries and worry more about what's going on here at home. And it has been our policies that have created the terrorists overseas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I think to a large extent that, yes, I agree. Kendra, thank you very much. John in New York City. Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing today? I wanted to call up and talk about photo enforcement for a minute.
You mean the traffic tickets where you're driving down the street and all of a sudden the lights flash and they got you?
Exactly. And there's more and more of them going up, and the system's become more complex. I've been on the forefront of this since I became a spokesman for this specialty spray that's supposed to reflect back the light to cancel out the pictures. But what the government has done is then they've then trumped upon that with building the cameras with the flash 6 feet above it so there's no interference. This is how much money they make off these cameras. And
it's privatized. In fact, I don't know about everywhere else in the country, but here in Portland, they've got a private corporation doing this. And it's funny, it's odd that you call about this, because yesterday I called the Portland Police Department, because about 4 months ago, I was driving down the street, and I was going about 10, 12 miles an hour over the speed limit, and not realizing it, Louise and I were in a conversation, and all of a sudden, flash, the lights went off, and it was like the van was parked by the side. They got me. And I never got the ticket in the mail. So I called the police department yesterday, and I said, I just want to make sure that, I don't have an outstanding traffic violation that, I failed to get in the mail. And, and they said, no, we don't have any record of it. So apparently, somehow I got lucky. Anyhow, why do you think that this is unlawful? Why do you think that this is illegal?
Okay, here's how it works. The timing on the lights is supposed to be 4 seconds on the yellow amber. If you look at most of where these traffic cameras are, you'll see less than a 2.8 second most of the time, which makes more people go through the light, but puts them in the situation where now if they've gotten a ticket, they're living on a fixed budget, that they're going to worry about that light so much that the driving in these intersections becomes very erratic and actually adds to the amount of accidents. And this is proved by the...
Well, if you're concerned about... So what you're concerned about is people getting nailed for turning on a red light when,
I'm more concerned about the safety issues of people having to live in fear
No, I understand, John. Do you know what a yellow? Now, I can only speak for three states in which I've taken driver's license tests. But in each one of those three states, a yellow light had a very specific meaning, and it was not the meaning that most people think it does. Do you know what a yellow light means? At least I can tell you in Georgia, Vermont, and Oregon.
It should mean stop.
No, it means do not enter the intersection.
Okay, but what happens if you're underneath that light as it's turning?
If you're already in the intersection, you finish, but it means do not enter the intersection. So it's the equivalent of a red light if you have not yet entered the intersection. Most people think it means caution. It means, you know, cautiously go through the intersection. It doesn't. A yellow light means don't enter the intersection.
Correct.
And, you know, if your concern is safety, that's the message I think that we need to get out there is not hyper-political, but you don't have like a constitutional argument about why corporations shouldn't be operating these flashing things. I mean, they're privatizing these traffic tickets. I frankly have some concerns about that. I think that if it's being done for profit, I have doubts about its credibility and its absolute accuracy. I mean, that's again, you know, the extent to which government functions are being privatized is the extent to which we're losing control of them, the extent to which we can no longer trust them, and that frankly concerns me. 45 minutes past the hour. Michael Moore may be showing up here. Larry Johnson's going to be with us at the top of the next hour to talk about this London bombing thing. We just wanted to get his take on it. We'll be continuing to take your calls throughout the day.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
I love songs sung in Chinese. I don't know why. It just sounds marvelous. Welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And it's our Anything Goes Friday. We're taking your calls on a whole variety of topics. We are going to punctuate the day with a few of our normal show elements. Victoria Jones here is with us from the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. And hello, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
So what's up in Washington, D.C. today?
Well, we've got interesting stuff going on. We've got Supreme Court decisions coming down. We've also got Senator Barack Obama saying that President Clinton and Vice President Cheney should not be impeached. So,
President Clinton? You mean President Bush?
Sorry. I had a flashback. Yeah. It was too much drinking Earl Grey tea in the 80s.
Back in the old days, we should have all just said no.
Right, exactly. They shouldn't be impeached anyway. It would result in a tit for tat, so he doesn't think they should be impeached. We should just get
on with business. Barack Obama says no impeachment. That's interesting.
He says no impeachment.
I don't think that's going to gain him a lot of friends among the base.
I don't think it is either. I think it's a surprising stance, actually.
Did he say this in response to a direct question, or did he just decide that he was going to make this part of his campaign position?
He said this. This was at a forum that he gave with Senator Dick Durbin, actually. He was asked a question about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So,
you know, I understand the political calculus. I absolutely understand the political calculus. And I understand that the Democrats are convinced that if they try to impeach Bush, that it's going to blow back at them. And I think they're wrong. I think they're just absolutely, totally wrong. But, you know, I'm not the oracle, so, you know, I might be wrong. I don't know.
I understand that it's a risk. The other big stuff, of course, is coming out of the Supreme Court. Now, there are a couple of things. One of which I think I understand, and the other of which I'm fairly sure I understand. The one I'm fairly sure that I understand is that, and this is one to please Tom, which is that they've agreed to hear the appeal by Guantanamo Bay detainees that they be allowed to challenge their confinement in federal courts. Now, back
right.
in April, they said no, they wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Here's the question, Victoria. Have they agreed to take the case on so that they can finally once and for all put an end to all these challenges by saying, yes, Dick Cheney and George Bush have the right to do whatever they damn well please with anybody, to hell with habeas corpus. If, boy, that was an obscenity-laced sentence, wasn't it? garlic and lemon juice is doing it to me now.
Really. I mean, can't you be satisfied with what you've got?
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, do you think that they're taking the case on because they intend to overturn it or because they intend to uphold it? I mean, that's my concern, is that they intend to uphold it.
I don't know. I really don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if they're going to overturn it. It wouldn't surprise me if they're going to uphold it. They've been so interesting on these issues. I have no idea which way they're going to jump on this.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been.
And then the other one that you said that you're uncertain about.
Well, I'm uncertain about because the story that I've read is fairly brief about it, but it's very interesting. This is about student speech, and they basically rejected a school district's appeal of a ruling that it violated a student's right by censoring his anti-Bush T-shirt. And you've got your friend Justice Samuel Alito saying that schools cannot censor political speech.
That's right. And in fact, that was the essence of their decision, Tuesday or Wednesday, this that came down, where the bong hits for Jesus case?
Right.
Was that the reason that they felt that the school was appropriate in censoring that was because it was promoting an unlawful activity, specifically bong hits. And although, you know, you can smoke tobacco in a bong, I suppose, if you're sufficiently crazy. But in any case, but they did say in that decision that had it been political, that they didn't consider this political speech. Had it been political speech, it would have been protected. So I would suggest, Victoria, that this ruling is consistent with that ruling, and in fact is a good thing.
That's why I said that Alito's your friend.
Well, he's not my friend, but he's, you know, I guess even a broken clock is right twice a day, is the old saying.
Exactly.
But, you know, do you know what the vote was on that?
Decision? Doesn't say what the vote was on that.
Yeah, that would be interesting to know.
Yeah, it doesn't say.
But political, what this means is that, you know, the implication here, this is interesting. I wonder if this will have any implication for things like the Secret Service or the Republican National Committee hustling people out of Bush speeches for having no blood for oil bumper stickers on their cars.
Oh, I think it's significant.
Speaking of censorship, you know.
By the way, I'm surprised you don't know more about this case, because it sounds to me like you wrote the message on this T-shirt. He calls Bush a lying drunk driver who abused cocaine and marijuana, and the chicken hawk in chief who engaged in a world domination tour.
Yes. Thank you, Victoria. I'm not that articulate, I guess. But yeah, I did read the story about it this morning. And I thought, well, that's interesting, and you know, at least there is some consistency to this court. Although, you know, how long it's going to last, and I shouldn't say at least. I mean, I'm just very, very concerned about it. So that's pretty much the news for the day.
Well, a bomb didn't go off in London.
Yeah, and in fact, we're going to talk to Larry Johnson about that after the top of the hour. He's of the opinion that this has been massively overhyped, and it's another be afraid, be very afraid opportunity that the media and the political parties are using. So that's going to be an interesting conversation. Do you expect there to be document dumps or anything? I mean, it's a Friday, right? Bad news going to be coming out? Any guesses as to what it might be?
It wouldn't surprise me if there's document dumps coming from the Department of Justice. I mean, yes, it is a Friday. It's the kind of thing that does happen. The only other thing I've got for you, which you may already have heard, which is that that Speaker Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Reid are going to be coordinating to force votes in July to end the Iraq War. You've probably already heard about this, but
yeah,
they've got a real plan now.
Right, and the plan is to take away the president's authority to wage the war. I would submit to you that authority was only to take down Saddam Hussein, and he's already exceeded it. But you know, who knows? But it's an interesting strategy. They have to regain the high ground on this thing. They blew it so badly by voting, you know, so quickly to fund the entire war. I think that they really, really hurt themselves with the Democratic base.
And I think they're trying to recoup, but I think they will recoup.
Well, I hope so. I really hope so. Victoria Jones, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
57 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio. Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Welcome to the Democracy Zone.
Well, the hysteria in the news, near hysterical level you know, wall-to-wall TV coverage. It's a bomb. It's in London. It's got to be Osama bin Laden is back. Thought we'd check in with one of the real experts in this field and somebody who I have tremendous respect for, Larry Johnson, former Central Intelligence Agency officer, U.S. State Department officer with the Department of Counterterrorism, and an expert in the fields of terrorism, aviation security crisis, and risk management. His blog is over at noquarter.typepad.com. And, Larry, in your blog today, you are, somewhat opinionated about how the press is covering this thing.
You have a career in diplomacy there, Tom.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, as I said, it's just a crock of crap. I mean, this is unbelievable. Here is, if nothing else, this is an indictment of the lack of science education within the media. Gasoline in a 25-gallon container is not going to readily explode, and even if it explodes, it's not a high explosive.
Yeah, well, let's back up just a little bit here, Larry, and explain to people what the news story is.
Well, the news story is that last night somebody saw a Mercedes driving erratically in London. When police were called, they got there, they saw smoke inside the vehicle, and then they get into the vehicle, and the report is that they prevent a bomb from igniting. And what it was two 25-gallon gasoline cans and filled with gas and some nails in the car. And so the media has been running just amok now that this was a suicide bomber of some sort or a terrorist bomber and that, this thing was going to just do massive damage. You know, they've watched way too many Hollywood movies,
I was just going to say, that's how it works in the movies,
Yeah.
The car hits something, it explodes, shrapnel goes flying everywhere.
Yeah, it looks like a minor, Hiroshima, nuclear bomb going off, you see the mushroom cloud. And, look, the fact of the matter is, it looks like whoever this was that was trying to do this put together an improvised and a poorly improvised Molotov cocktail at that. And, those are incendiaries. The only way you get 25 gallons of gas to really explode is you take out 23 of the gallons, leave a gallon or two on the bottom, then you get a vapor, and then if you can figure out how to ignite the vapor. But, this guy, amateur hour with this, is that, he shuts the windows, closes up the car, no oxygen. Well, if you light something, want it to burn, and you don't have a lot of oxygen in there to help feed the fire as it goes out.
Thus the smoke rather than the fire.
Right. And, then they're jumping to the conclusion, this has to be Muslim terrorists. I mean, CNN's still running with that headline. This must have been a bad Muslim because he didn't stick around to do it.
A bad terrorist, anyway.
Or set himself on fire.
Yeah. So what we have here is another, in your opinion, what we have here is another example of absolute screw-up incompetent wannabes. I mean, like the guys down in Florida, the guys up in New Jersey, people who are, incompetent, but the press is treating it like it is the great danger that we should be terrified du jour.
Right. No, in fact, I've had some even comment, this is the anniversary of the bombing in London. I said, no, it wasn't. That was July 7th. This is, a week ahead of time. The difference between the guys that have been caught in the United States is in each one of those cases, you had the FBI with informants in those groups inciting them to do the stuff.
Yeah.
Encouraging them to, so they could set them up to do it. I mean, in this case, it's not even clear whether or not you had a disgruntled former employee or someone who was upset with his girlfriend or, I'm assuming it was a him, not a her. But they've jumped to the conclusion that this is terrorism simply because you find someone tried to set two gas cans on fire in a Mercedes with some nails. And, it'd be one thing if they discovered 50 pounds of Semtex. I mean, that would do some significant damage, or the traditional Al-Qaeda explosive triacetone triperoxide, TATP. But,
Or even fertilizer and diesel fuel any kind of
that, you need a detonator. My question I pose on the blog is, what they call a car full of 50 gallons of gas? A Cadillac Escalade.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Or a Hummer, yeah. something with a big gas tank, yeah.
It's a danger, perhaps, for global warming, but but what is so, I think reprehensible and shameful is, in fact, I got a call from CNN a little bit ago, Spanish, wanted me to come on and said, we want to talk in general about the threat of terrorism and where, what these people are trying to do. I said, I'm not even going to participate in that. I said, this is ridiculous. I said, hey, it's not even terrorism. I said, the only one out there scaring people right now are you, CNN, MSNBC, and Fox. You are the ones who are citing that this is a terrorist act when there's absolutely no evidence to justify it whatsoever. And moreover, nothing happened.
Yeah. So somebody tried to light some gasoline and just, you know, it's, yeah. Yeah, it's excellent point, Larry, and it really illustrates, I think, how if the goal of a terrorist, if the goal of Bin Laden, for example, or you know, terrorist X, is to create terror, it can only work if everybody, all the players, that would be the government and the media, go along with it.
Right.
I mean, you know, Tim McVeigh, for example, you know, Bill Clinton's response to Tim McVeigh was, you're not going to terrify us. You are a criminal. Or he said to McVeigh that he was a criminal, that he was going to track him down. He's going to put him in jail. He ultimately executed him. And end of discussion. You know, and the people in Oklahoma City felt closure. There was a criminal investigation. He was declared a criminal, and that was it.
Right.
And it wasn't a, oh my God, let's all be afraid. You know, let's look out for, you know, Bush, on the other hand, has used 9/11 and now every little thing since then as another opportunity to try and scare the bejesus out of us. And frankly, in my opinion, for political power, political gain.
And that's very, you know, very often what they're playing to. I mean, this is, you know, the media likes to take on this very solemn voice and all heaven, you know, I'm talking particularly about the TV cable news shows. But,
yeah.
You know, they like to pretend that they're just, you know, passive observers in this. In fact, they're out there whipping it up like, you know, cheerleaders at a Yale-Harvard football game.
Yeah, which brings us back to the question of at what point does the media have to serve the public interest? Because this is a classic example of what happens when the news divisions are taken over by the entertainment divisions.
Right. Well, you know, for example, what someone should have been pointing out, and I haven't heard, I haven't really been watching that much, but I've watched enough to know that nobody's gone on air to point out, okay, look, you got two cans of gasoline. The only way you can really get an explosion out of two cans of gasoline is if you don't have a lot of gas in them. So that you get the vapor and the vapor can ignite. But then you got to figure out a way, how do you ignite the vapor in such a way that you don't incinerate yourself before you can get away?
And plus, it would have to be done in a closed environment under relatively high pressure, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah. But
sort of like in a piston, you know, a cylinder?
But what you have in this case is inside the Mercedes. In fact, it's going to contain the explosion. It's not going to tamp it or enhance it. And so, you know, it's just the notion that they were going to kill hundreds and that this was a, you know, some sort of car bomb a la, you know, the daily experience of the average Iraqi is just nonsense. But, you know, they're
amazing.
Just, you know, running around, whipping up the fear, and it's, you know.
So the message here, the carry-home message, Larry Johnson, noquarter.typepad.com, the carry-home message is let's calm down, take a deep breath, and
turn off the TV, take a walk around the block, and put your radio on so you can listen as you walk.
Yeah, there you go.
And listen to the Tom Hartman show while you're walking.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's very kind of you. Larry, great talking with you, and thanks for keeping all these things in perspective over at your blog at noquarter.typepad.com.
Thanks,
well
Tom.
Done.
Appreciate
good
it.
Talking with you, Larry.
All right, man. Bye.
Thank you very much. 1-866-303-2270. Josh in Syracuse, New York. Hey, Josh, about a minute before we got to take a break. What's up?
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Good.
Good, good. You said something a little while ago about privatization, and I thought I would bring a quick story for you here. I had a heart attack about 9 weeks ago. Turns out I had very high cholesterol. I went in, I had an emergency angioplasty. Well, my doctor, my cardiologist, prescribed 4 drugs for me post the operation. And I went home and I did a little research, and it turns out that 3 of the 4 drugs didn't have anything to do with what my condition was. In fact, they served no purpose. And the one drug, the statin drug, which does lower cholesterol, only has a 0.05 percentile success ratio in lowering plaque, which is what my condition is. I brought this back to him, and I suggested a couple of other remedies that I had been reading about, one in particular that they do in Europe, which is an HGH therapy, which is basically foolproof. And I asked him if he could, you know, maybe we could get away from the statin drug and do the HGH therapy instead. And he freaked out.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's been talking to the detail men from the pharmaceutical companies. You're spot on, Josh. A friend of mine in the UK had a heart attack, and she's taking 6 pills of fish oil a day, prescribed by her doctor. I mean, which is you know, changing the balance of fats in the body. I mean, it's just incredible, the power of the pharmaceutical companies, which is a great segue to Michael Moore. We'll see if he's going to show up. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Now back to the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Twenty-one minutes past the hour, blogging over at airamerica.com/Tom Hartman page. A live chat room, also from, you can get to it from airamerica.com or tomhartman.com. And just click live chat, it'll get you in there, say hi. Our telephone number, 1-866-303-2270. Peter in Springfield, Massachusetts. Hey, Peter, welcome.
Hi, Peter. I'm in Springfield right now, but I'm from Vermont. First of all, I just want to say, Tom, you got a great program. I miss you so much up in Vermont because you're not up there anymore.
that station, whole long story, but anyway, yeah.
Yes, but anyway, I wanted to say I hope that the issue of the debate last night isn't out of time here. I find that last night one of the things that was missed was the issue of the issue of both the credit card. You're talking about economic disparity, about the credit card industry, number one, and number two, the bankruptcy, the new bankruptcy law that went into effect. So those things are like in conjunction with one another, and I think they're a disgrace.
I agree, and it would have made Joe Biden very uncomfortable.
Yeah, and I think Hillary Clinton as well.
Yeah, I don't recall how she voted on those issues. Do you, sure?
Anyway, I hope that this topic isn't out of time with your program, because I know you've gone beyond it. But I've been on the
No, it's fine. This is Anything Goes Friday, any topic you want to talk about. But you're right, the economic justice issues, and particularly the corporate takeover of our Congress, basically.
Those are two issues that are hardly ever discussed, and I just can't believe it, because they play a major role in the disparity and the misfortune of a lot of people, you know, particularly in the underclass. I'm just amazed that it didn't even touch upon it wasn't even touched upon at all last night. Anyway, that's all I had to say. And thanks again for your program. It's a great program.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot, Peter, for calling. I appreciate it. Luann in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Luann.
Hi. I want to talk about the issue of how they've gotten everyone scared to death of everything. A couple of weeks ago here in Phoenix, I guess a blind man walked into a bank. It was one of the banks inside a grocery store, and he had a walking stick, and teller got scared because of the way he was dressed and how he looked, so she buzzed the police. The police came, evacuated the whole grocery store. Well, in the meantime, someone inside the store had ordered a pizza. Well, the pizza man dropped his big bag of pizza, so that was suspicious, so they had the bomb squad come in and blow up this bag, and pepperoni pizza went everywhere.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, it's
ridiculous. this is, you know, I have been for several years very reluctant to call George Bush a terrorist, because I think that it's the kind of hyperbole that doesn't serve the discussion. But at a very real level, this is what's going on, is that between the media and the Bush administration's attempts to hype to use 9/11 for political purposes, we are being terrorized by ourselves, or at least by elements among us, and it's tragic. And I congratulate Larry Johnson for pointing it out. And Luann, you really put a good point on it. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Dan in San Diego, California. Hey, Dan.
Yeah. Good morning. Real quick about the poll, I think Kucinich, Edwards, and Obama are beholden to special interest the least in that order. So I would vote for Edwards because I think he's the least beholden that has a chance. Call is about someone called about an hour ago, talked about exposing the people behind the Bush administration. And I think I'd like to add, that we should pursue them even after 08 if we win, if we still have control, because those people won't go away. And the Democrats, they have a tendency to sort of say, well, election's over, let's move on, let's get down to business. But I mean, to me, that's analogous to, say somebody steals millions of dollars that work at a bank, and they resign or get fired before you have a chance to bring charges, and you say, like, oh, well, they're not here anymore, just let them go. And I think that's a mistake, and I think everybody should, call their representatives to make sure that they follow these people.
Hold the Bushes to account.
I absolutely
agree that it's very, very important to be pursuing these issues and maintaining, holding their feet to the fire. I was very disappointed to see the end of the investigations of Iran-Contra, for that matter. I mean, Bush pardoning all those guys on the way out, and the investigations into the Clintons, I guarantee you that there are still people snooping around on that. Although none of those, even had any substance to them. I mean, here we've got, crimes that are obviously crimes. I mean, a federal judge has already determined that George W. Bush committed federal crimes, federal felonies, which certainly are impeachable.
Go ahead. I was going to switch to something else real quick about the red light cameras, if I could.
Yeah.
We just have a few seconds.
Yeah, real quick.
The experiences down here, what it was sort of like a conflict of interest. Like, they had this private company, and they manipulated the timing on the lights, designed in a way to catch people and boost revenue. I mean, it was a built-in conflict of interest.
Again, that's my concern. When, it's like everybody gets all upset if police have, like, quotas, right? They say, oh, this cop has got a quota. He's supposed to write 5 tickets today. And police departments all over the country say, no, we don't have quotas. We don't do that. We don't, it would be wrong to do that. And yet they hire a for-profit corporation. Well, the for-profit corporation obviously has a quota. Make as much profit as possible. Write as many tickets as possible. And game the system if necessary. 27 minutes past the hour.
There's out across the land the impeachment of Bush. For crimes and lies, you'd like to see him kicked out on his push. Friends, you've got good reason. I support you absolutely. But this impeachment season, don't forget your civic duty. Impeach Cheney first. It can still get worse. After Bush is in cuffs, it's liable to get rough. Impeach Cheney first.
34 minutes past the hour. Indeed. Hey, today's the day. It's the day. Sicko is opening in theaters all across the United States, and Michael Moore is with us. MichaelMoore.com, of course, his website. Michael Moore, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me here.
Just absolutely great to have you with us on the show. Sicko, you're already drawing fire from faux news, editorializing against you. You have taken on one of the largest and most powerful industries in this country. So far, what has been, from where you're sitting, the way it looks to you, what has been the response?
Well, the industry itself they're not quite sure what to do because, see, they already know that they've pissed off most of America between the pharmaceutical companies and the health insurance companies. There's already a simmering anger out there amongst the American people. So, the most creative response I've seen actually from three or four insurance companies put out a statement last week saying that they're really happy that I made the movie and that they believe in healthcare for all.
Interesting.
Just as long as if it does go to a government program, all the government money comes to them. And they'll administrate it from that point on. Thank you very much.
Yeah, exactly. And tragically, there's a bunch of politicians who are taking that position as well.
Yes, and they are called Democrats. This is not a good thing. The Edwards Plan, Obama, they're missing a crucial point here, which is that we need to remove the insurance man as the middleman between the doctor and the patient. When a doctor has a patient in the office and she needs to do a treatment or a procedure or an operation or whatever, she shouldn't have to call an insurance company, some guy sitting in a cubicle 1,000 miles away to get permission. And of course, that guy in the cubicle, as I show in the movie, has a vested interest in denying as many procedures and operations as possible, because he gets a bonus at the end of the year based on how many denials he's done. So there is absolutely no room for private insurance or any kind of profiteering when it comes to when we're talking about people's health.
Yeah, I'm old enough to remember when Blue Cross, you and I both grew up in Michigan, and Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan was a not-for-profit corporation, and I believe in virtually every state in the country, back in the 50s and 60s anyway, health insurance companies were required to be not-for-profit organizations.
That's right.
And there was this turning point in the Nixon administration, and you talk about it in your movie. Tell us about that.
Well, we uncovered these tapes that they're in the National Archives and actually in the Nixon Library as part of all the Watergate tapes, but it had nothing to do with Watergate. It's the day that John Ehrlichman and Richard Nixon sat in the Oval Office and discussed how they were going to set up these HMOs that would guarantee the insurance companies more profits because they would have to provide less care for the patients. And that was the whole scam, to figure out how to provide as little care as possible so that the insurance company would have to pay out as little as possible. Because the insurance company, obviously, can only make a profit if they pay as few claims as possible. If they end up having to pay everything, then, you know, they don't make as much money. So I show this, and I actually play the tapes in the movie.
Yeah. Now, I talked to John Edwards a couple of days ago about his health care plan, and confronted him about the fact that his plan still has room for private health insurance companies in it. And his response was, and I'm paraphrasing, but I think this is pretty close, was that he's suggesting that everybody in America ought to be able to participate in or buy into Medicare. And because Medicare has an overhead of only 2 or 3%, it's always going to be the cheapest. And that will put out of business the health insurance companies, you know, just through a natural process, that otherwise it's politically unfeasible because they're just so powerful to just say, okay, we're going to pull the plug and just shut all these companies down. It's something that couldn't happen. What's your take on that?
Well, so in other words, then they won't figure out that the Medicare for All plan is actually going to put them out of business too, right?
They know that, but I mean they wouldn't be able to argue in the public arena as effectively because, you know, of saying, hey, he's going to take away all your choices, which is the argument that they make for people who are arguing for single payer health care. Their political rebuttal is that these politicians want to take away your choices. So Edwards, I think maybe he's right, is doing what is really kind of an elegant political jujitsu, is, okay, we're not going to take away your choices. We're going to give you more choices. And in fact, you have the choice of Medicare, which is cheap, or, this for-profit right. insurance company, and the insurance companies will die as a result of it.
Well, he is right about that part, because that is what will happen in the long run. But I know I've heard him say too that he doesn't think that politically the American people won't get behind it because in fact they don't trust the government now because the government just seems to screw everything up, and so when people think about having government run their health insurance, that it's like, oh, you mean the same government that ran Katrina,
right?
And that's a big fear, but that's not the government that's messing that up. That's the people that are elected and are appointed. And
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, this is the self-fulfilling prophecy that Ronald Reagan set up. I mean, this his Reagan's famous...
I've always felt the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
And we all laughed when he said it, and, you know, it was a great punchline. He used it all the time, and really what it was the beginning of the destruction of the social contract, the beginning of the destruction of the social contract between us and the government that we own.
Right, to the point now where Reagan's offspring, in the sort of political gene pool that's been depleted to the point where we have George W. Bush, is that when the government says, I'm here to help, you should run for the hills.
Right.
Because whether it's invading a country that we have no business being in, or whether it's heck of a job brownie, it usually does mean bad news. But the government wasn't always like that. We used to have real leadership. You know, we you know, there was an FDR at one point.
Right. And, we put people on the moon. I mean,
people on the moon in 8 years. I mean, we defeated the Nazis and the Japanese and Mussolini in less time than it's taken us to secure the road from the airport to downtown Baghdad. And that isn't even secure yet.
Yeah.
So,
good point. So here's the practical question. The Supreme Court this week ruled that corporations can spend unlimited amounts of money on political campaigns around, quote, issues, end quote. What this means, my interpretation of what this means, and I think I'm right on this, is that if a political candidate, which presumably would be the Democrat in the 2008 election, is taking on the insurance industry, or the for-profit health industry, let's just take the whole thing. This is an industry that measures its profit in tens and hundreds of billions of dollars. And, I mean, all the money that John Kerry and George Bush spent together in the last election cycle, in the 2004 election, wasn't even $1 billion. And yet this is an industry that could write a $1 billion check and not even notice it. And how do we, given this Supreme Court decision, how can anybody take on this industry? I mean, we think, you know, Hillary Clinton having a $300 million campaign launched against her was a big deal. Her and Bill back when they tried to, very modest reform of the healthcare system. What could be coming down the road would make that look like nothing. What do we do?
You're absolutely right. The only solution at this point is that all money has to be removed, because that's the only way the Supreme Court has been able to come in and say, well, the corporations shouldn't be denied their chance to do this, or, the PACs and all the stuff, the earlier decisions that came down. But because it was saying, so you're saying some people can give some money, but others can't, and they're to be punished because they're rich. And so they would come down and say, you know, their rights are being violated. But if we removed all money from the process, if we had a Canadian system or a British system, a system where essentially it's financed, the campaign's financed by the government, campaign for prime minister in Canada, I think, lasts for 5 weeks. It's mandated. It's all it can last is 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. Every party has equal time in terms of ads on TV that are funded by the government. And all candidates are at the debate. So you watch a Canadian prime minister debate, all five parties are there, up there on the stage, given equal time.
Right, but I agree with you, but that's not going to happen between now and the 08 election. So any ideas on strategy for us to push back against this industry when they start dropping millions, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars into television advertising?
We're down really to the last arrow in our quiver. Basically,
which is your movie?
No.
I would say one of the best remedies is go see Sicko.
It's the fact that it's still one person, one vote, and there's more of us than there are of them. There's more of everybody who works for a living than the upper 1% that are going to be putting millions, perhaps billions, into this next election cycle. They can spend all that money, but in the end, they literally can't buy our vote. And when the curtain closes in the voting booth, we hold the power. We will always hold the power. And so it will become our job then to use that power and to get people out to vote who understand that.
Yeah,
that will be no easy task. All of us sort of have to dig in right now and commit to doing whatever we can do in the next 16 months.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the mayoral election in New York, and you know, Bloomberg spent $70 per vote versus his opponent, which I think was Mark Green, spent $17, if I recall correctly. I mean, it's just the power of money in elections is just it's just astounding. So anyway, a brilliant movie, and it's rolling out today. Sicko is the new film from Michael Moore. And Michael Moore, thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom. And
it is.
Thanks for Air America.
Yeah. Amen. and thanks for making a marvelous movie. I mean, this is such important work you're doing. And all the way back, I mean, I've been watching your movies forever, and all the way back to Roger and me, just great, great work. MichaelMoore.com, the website. If you want more information about the movie, it opens today, Sicko. 46 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
cream, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, thanks so much to my producer, David Poole, to Louise Hartman, to Chris Lopresto and Lauren Kirshner at Air America, to Ben over at White Rose Society and Sue Nethercutt, the folks in our chat room, Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to all the radio stations carrying this program, our sponsors, and in particular to you for listening to our program. You make it all possible. And congratulations, we have a winner it's not really a contest. It's David has picked his favorite, his favorite blog. So congratulations to Poi Boy. Yeah, Poi Boy writes blogs over at airamerica.com/TomHartmanpage. Says, I want justice. I want justice for 9/11. I want justice for the illegal invasion of Iraq. I want justice for the wanton waste of precious lives of our brave military men and women. I want justice for the perversion of our capitalist system and the theft of the commons. I want justice for all the high crimes and misdemeanors committed against the people of the United States of America by this arrogant criminal administration. By March 2009, once we're past the possibility of a Bush pardon, I want to see Bush, Cheney, and the rest of these bozos criminally prosecuted in a court of law, indicted and imprisoned while impeachment proceedings are initiated against Scalia, Roberts, Alito, and Thomas. That, my friends, would truly be justice. Aloha. So thank you, Poi Boy, for your post, and you will be receiving a copy, an autographed copy of Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It, my new book. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, and Marilyn in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Marilyn.
Hey, Tom. Boy, there's so much depressing going on, but I saw Sicko last weekend in the sneak preview here.
Uh-huh.
And there's a much bigger story, even though it's generally focused on health care, and it's about the destruction of the middle class in this country, because when you see the comparison with other countries where he's showing how people live, it's not just the health care system. One of the things that he highlights is higher education being free for the masses.
The vast majority, vast majority of developed countries.
And another thing that he shows there is that our government makes us afraid, where other governments, I think it was France they were talking about, they're afraid of the people because they riot in the streets, and we got to get out and make ourselves heard, because otherwise we're mowed over in this country. But I hope this movie ignites people.
Yeah, good. Marilyn, I'm going to see it this weekend. I'm looking forward to it. So
brilliant.
Thanks for the heads up and the tip, and thank you for the call. And the point that, you know, if you have a choice of living in a country where the people are afraid of the government versus a country where the government are afraid of the people, I would think that, I can tell you, I know, Thomas Jefferson would certainly choose the latter. John in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, John.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking the call. And very quickly, I wanted to mention the hypocrisy and all of this bomb scare going on in the media, on in England, and the cooperation of the media. I mean, we have in the United States Mr. I think Luis Posada, who came in here in a suspected terrorist, planting a bomb on a Cuban airplane, killing 27 people, and as a fugitive, Venezuela and Cuba, and he walks into this country, sits down in Miami, and is probably right now sitting next to a swimming pool while Americans are going around scared to death about terrorists.
Right, and this is a guy who actually did blow up an airliner.
Right.
And but it was a Cuban airliner, so we're protecting him.
Hypocrisy is overwhelming.
Oh, it is. And the fact that that story was maybe three paragraphs on page 16B, it's
a terrorist right here sitting in a swimming pool. Courtesy of the U.S. taxpayer.
Right, and when one of Bush's reasons for invading Iraq was that there was a terrorist associated with Al Qaeda who had spent a couple of days in downtown Baghdad. I mean, you know, it's like, hey, wait a minute, what's the disconnect? Thanks for the point, well made. Chris in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Chris.
Hi, Tom. You know, I guess it's a measure of how cynical I've become. Every time that I see television news or news in general, really, really concerned with a terrorist plot or a potential terrorist plot, I start looking everywhere else to see what's been taken off the front page or what's not being reported on the news because of it. because there always seems to be something. I mean, today the Supreme Court basically ruled that they are going to rule on habeas corpus for Guantanamo Bay detainees, which is something the Bush administration did not want. But you barely hear about it because it's all there was a...
Well, or is it something that the Bush administration does want and they've already cut a backroom deal with their good buddies, the majority of the Supreme Court?
Well, that could be...
I mean, that's what frankly concerns me the most.
Well, nobody today is talking about Dick Cheney declaring himself a, what, unaccountable fourth... branch
yeah, it's
of
the
our
Dick,
government.
It's the Dick branch.
Yeah, the Dick branch of our government. Yeah. I'm with Keith Olbermann. He's a rogue state. We should invade him.
There you go. Chris, well said. Thank you very much. Monday, we'll be playing a best-of program, shaking it up with Paul Maron, conservative Harry Benswanger, John Lott Jr., lots of debates and discussion. I'm going to be in Seattle watching a preview of Leonardo DiCaprio's new movie, The 11th Hour, which I'm in. And so I'm just not going to be able to do the show because it's in the morning. It's a private preview. But I'll be back on Tuesday and continuing to your calls. But Monday's going to be a great show. You'll enjoy it. And don't forget, my friends, have a great weekend. But don't forget, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday or Tuesday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.